part-time fanboy.
Part-time fanboy doing my thing.
More powerful than a locomotive.
I'm not doing part.
This is a part-time fanboy, and my name is Christian Horn, and I am on the line with Neil Gibson, correct? The publisher,
that's right.
The publisher, owner, creator of T-Pub. That is the name of your company, correct?
That's right, T-Pub Comics.
That's right, and we are on the line. You are in England, and in case anybody can hear those noises in the background, you are actually in a Starbucks. I am interviewing you in the UK in a Starbucks. So just if there's any problems with this recording, just to let listeners know, that is what's going on. But at, you know, there's a first time for everything. So this sounds like it's going to work. So we should be okay. So Neil, you are the creator of, well, why don't we get started with your Kickstarter, because that's currently what you're doing now. You have a Kickstarter, correct?
I do, yes, for Michael Gordon. So I don't just publish my material, I publish other people's as well. And Michael Gordon's, I think it's like 220% funded already, but it's got 4 days left.
Yeah.
It's for a series called Transdimensional, which is sort of aliens meets the abyss.
Oh, okay.
That's right. I do have to apologize about the Starbucks thing. And the reason I'm in Starbucks is because I'm a coward. Right now, it's true. Right now in my house, there's full of kids running around at an Easter egg hunt. And I was just terrified of being there. So I ran away to the coffee shop.
No, that totally makes sense. I just wanted to let listeners know where you were, because we can hear the hissing of the espresso machine in the background a little bit, but that's okay. We've had people interview from stranger places, so don't even worry about it. So tell us a little bit more about the Kickstarter. It's almost over. It's ending in 4 days. And is this through T-Pub, or is this like another endeavor? Or I took a quick look at it, and it is through your handle, correct? Your mantle.
Yes, so we did one before that was separate, but people seem to want to do it through us. So we're doing that. We actually have a dedicated person who's going to run Kickstarters for our project going forward. So our model is T-Pub started, originally our name was T-Pub Publications. Everyone called us T-Pub, so that's why we just switched the name.
Oh.
But originally it was just for me because I wanted to make comics, and people like my stuff. What I found is that I really, really love editing. And I like taking other people's creations and making them better. And the way I do that is purely by asking questions and saying, have you thought about this? How about this? And pushing other writers, colorists, artists, and letterers into doing the best job they can. And so our model is to find people who are interested in breaking into comics, help them put out their first comic, and then help run a Kickstarter for it. And then they get a way into industry, and that's how we've helped several people break in so far.
Gotcha. Oh, wow, that's really... When did T-Pub start? When did you start the endeavor?
We started back in 2012. I never actually wanted to make comics. I just love reading them. I got into them quite late in my mid-20s, and I discovered things like Sandman, Preacher, pretty much everything from Vertigo. And Watchmen was the one that started me off.
Oh.
And in the US, comics are quite well regarded, but in the UK, sadly, people think they're for kids. If you're still reading comics at age 15, you're old to be reading comics.
Really?
Yeah, it's and like even my uncle, I gave him my first book. He read it and went, "Ooh, Neil, is this supposed to make me laugh?" Because he just thought it was like the funny pages, or the book. It had to be funny. It just didn't cross his mind that you could have intelligent content in comic books.
Oh wow, that's really interesting, because sort of the the thing that we hear over in the U.S. is that comics are more highly regarded, or that there's more material overseas, you know, like in France or Europe and the U.K. and Japan and stuff like that. But it sounds like you're telling me that comics are not necessarily seen as sort of like adult reading material over there.
Definitely not in the U.K. Things are changing. In France, certainly they are. The equivalent of the Wall Street Journal every week publish the best graphic novels that week and review them. That would not happen in the top papers in the U.K. In Japan, comics are very well respected in the Benelux region. In Italy as well, to a slightly lesser degree, but still they're respected. But not so much in the U.K., sadly. But things are changing. We now have a comics laureate. I think right now it's actually Charlie Adlard, who does the Doors for the Walking Dead.
Sure.
So he officially reports to the Queen on comics.
Oh, that's right. That's right. Oh, wow. That's amazing. So that's kind of a big step for you guys, I guess.
I think so. I love good comics, and I get in trouble for this, but I do say that most aren't great. But, uh-huh. but then that's like by definition. Most music isn't great. Most TV isn't great. But there's great material in every medium. And I think comics is a fantastic medium. And for me, it's one of the most efficient ones. Because a picture says 1,000 words. And with one image, you can explain so much about the universe someone's in, the setting, the body language, the emotions people are feeling, with the colors and the tone. You can it's so quick to read and communicate. And I just love it as a medium. I don't know why I'm telling you this. I'm preaching to the choir, but there you go.
Yeah, no, I mean, well, it's always good to say, because, I mean, definitely people forget a lot of, like, what is great about comics. And on our podcast, we don't just focus on comics. We talk about movies and TV. And sometimes comics gets lost in the mix, especially, you know, just with fans. But so it's interesting to me, because you're saying that you sort of, like, discovered or rediscovered comics in your 20s. How do you go from a 20-year-old who loves reading comics to a professional who ends up kind of creating their own publishing company?
Well, what happened was I was stuck. I used to be a management consultant, so I'd fly to different countries and help companies improve their bottom line. And I was working on a project in Qatar, in the Middle East, and normally you work ridiculous hours till 10 every night. On this one project, it was quite easy. I was done by 7. Uh-huh. And so I had all this free time, and my friends and family were back in the UK, so rather than just watch TV in the hotel room, I love good comics. Why didn't I try writing one? Uh-huh. And so I did. I put it out, and the response was so enthusiastic and positive. I was not expecting that. I was a science background all the way. I never thought I could write. But then I put my book out, and I thought, you know what, I'm going to give this a go. Because if it doesn't work out, the worst thing is I can go back to my old job. If it does work out, then every day is a holiday for me, because I get to work in comics.
Sure, sure. And
then a year later, my first book went to number one on the Kindle in the UK, and so I never looked back.
Oh, wow. So which book was that?
That's Twisted Dark. That's still the biggest seller we have at TPUB.
Yeah.
It's kind of, critics compare it to Black Mirror or Twilight Zone, if you like those series.
Yeah, sort of. I've read a little bit of it. It's sort of, it seems like it's an anthology series, correct? And it's, like you said, like Black Mirror, Twilight Zone, kind of dark horror.
It's definitely dark. It's very realistic. The stuff could be happening right next door to you. But I always hesitate a bit when people say it's an anthology, because it's not really. It's actually one giant story, and okay. All the stories in it all tie together towards one big ending. So it's because my favorite books are the ones I reread. My favorite comics, like I think I've read Why the Last Man 5 times, and, or you know, Lock and Key I've read twice, and Fables I've read 3 times. This was designed to be reread, because if you have 5 minutes free, you can read a short story and it's self-contained and it should be satisfying with a twist ending. However, once you read an entire volume, you start seeing the same characters reappearing. And when you start reading several volumes, you realize all these characters, not just interacting, the stories are building in each other. They're not in chronological order like Pulp Fiction. Mm-hmm. And it's all gradually building towards one giant ending.
Oh, okay. How many volumes of Twisted Dark are there currently?
6 was released in January. I've got plans. Volume 7 is in production now, and I've planned up to volume 18.
Gotcha. And are these being, they're being published in print, correct? Because I think even at WonderCon, I was at WonderCon and I think I saw one of the books and I was like, oh, this is what, this is the book that Neil works on or publishes.
Yeah, it's in print. We do sell digitally, but for some reason, we make a lot more money from the print versions because people like having a hard copy. And because again, a lot of the feedback I get is that people like rereading them. And so they'll wait till the new volume comes out, then they'll reread the whole series, trying to spot connections before they read the new volume.
Gotcha. Yeah, I mean, I'm looking at your website right now, and you've got Twisted Dark, Tabitha, Twisted Light as well, Tortured Life, Theatrics, Turncoat, The World of Chub Chub. And it's really interesting because I really like the way that your site is laid out. It's tpub.co.uk. Because under each title, you have a space where it says you might also like, and it gives recommendations. Like if you like this book, then you'll like, you know, the different books that you have listed. It's actually a really smart strategy for your website.
Oh, thanks. Well, we do this at conventions because about an eighth of our readers, the first comics they read was our comics because I just try to push the medium in general, but I realize that I'm not for everyone. Not everyone will like my type of work. So if someone's just interested in history, I recommend Persepolis or Mouse. If they like action, I recommend like Watchmen or Thor by Jason Aaron. I just want to find right content to suit them. And this all stems from my frustration from the UK where people assume comics are just for kids. It's a great medium, but and when they read it as a kid, but they grow up and stop reading comics. And that's like thinking to me, you grow out of watching TV, you grow out of reading a book. You don't, you just grow out of certain content and you move on to other stuff. So we may not make the right content for you, but we'll try and find someone else that makes it for you so you can still enjoy good comics.
Sure. Yeah, I mean, obviously, as a comic book fan myself, I mean, I definitely believe in what you're talking about. It's interesting to me how, I mean, it seems like, I mean, you wrote your first book, Twisted Dark, and it came out and it was a success. And if comics are not necessarily considered sort of like adult reading fare, did your family or people that you knew like think you were kind of crazy? Were they like, what are you doing?
Yeah, pretty much everyone said like, you're giving up this career to make cartoons.
Yeah.
And I said, well, yeah, because it's a great medium. It's just a story. It's something I just love. And I did get a lot of pushback when I first decided I wanted to do it. And funnily enough, I cut short our honeymoon to go to my very first Comic-Con by 2 days.
Oh, wow. Really?
Well, yeah, because I thought if I'm going to quit my job to do this, I have to go to a Comic-Con and see what it's like, because that's what I have to attend in the future. And so my wife is very supportive and said, okay.
Oh, that's interesting. So, because the thing that sometimes I'll hear in the press over here, I mean, obviously you guys have comic shops and you have comic cons, correct? So there is a
fan base.
We
actually have one that's... well, there is, but it is much, much smaller. I think the US market is, if not at least 50 times the size of the UK. America is the home of comics, really. And if you look, there was a period in the late 90s when a lot of the top writers were dominated by Brits going across to the US. But all the major publishing companies, the only ones that aren't in the English-speaking world, the only one that I can think of that isn't American is Rebellion. That makes 2000 AD and Judge Dredd.
Yeah.
But the rest are all American. I mean, because you have comics here, but that was things like the Beano or the Dandy. These are things aimed at nine-year-olds.
Sure.
Which is another reason why in this country people thought it was childish, because it was aimed at children.
Sure. So, that kind of blows my mind, because like you said, that a lot of our sort of bigger writers, and I actually just watched a documentary on Amazon about 2000 AD, like several weeks ago, like the creation and the founding and like the people involved. And you don't really hear any of that, like, oh, it's just considered for kids in the UK. It seems like, particularly because of the kinds of writers that we've gotten that tend to write sort of more mature, you know, for lack of a better term, grown up material, but you're kind of blowing my mind in saying that comics, you know, any kind of comics are not considered worthy reading material by the public in the UK.
I mean, it is changing, but it is a widely held belief.
Wow.
I remember when I was, I worked abroad for a while. I came back to the UK when I was about, I just got into comics actually. So I was probably about 24. And I was waiting for a friend in a restaurant. I hadn't seen her for a few years. And I was reading Lone Wolf and Cub, the manga. Uh-huh. And she looked at me. She's a lawyer. And she saw me reading that, went, really? You can't keep reading comics forever.
Uh-huh.
And I was like, what? Have you actually read any of them? You're judging it without even knowing anything about it.
Sure. Sure.
Oh. And that was someone my age, let alone an older age group.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, but so then, but in your 20s, how did you rediscover them? Because, I mean, considering it seems like you read them as a kid, and then I think you said Watchmen was kind of the first one that you picked up again. Why did you pick up Watchmen? I mean, if it's considered sort of sort of for younger readers, what would possess sort of a 20-something-year-old adult? Was it the movie that made you go, hey, I should check this out, or what was it?
No, it was before the movie came out. It was I was backpacking around the world, and I was in Vancouver at the time.
Oh, okay.
And I had a friend who is a joke that he was Wolverine, and I walked past this comic shop, and in the window they had this little small toy. I thought, yeah, for $5 I'd buy a joke present of
sure.
Wolverine for him. I went in there, and they heard my British accent, and they assumed I personally knew Neil Gaiman, Warren Ellis, and Garth Ennis. And I had to point out I'd never heard of these people.
Sure.
They said, but you've read Watchmen, right? I said, what? And they said, stay here. They went to the back of the shop and got the book and then said to me with such passion, buy this. And
yeah.
It was just their passion for this material that I thought, okay, I'll give it a shot. And I actually remember feeling silly. I spent $30 on the book, walking out of the shop going, I spent $30 on something just because someone wanted me to.
Sure.
And I remember feeling silly, but I read it and I just thought, wow, what have I been missing?
Yeah, yeah. Wow, and that's a pretty serious first read.
I've been hooked ever since, so.
Yeah.
Yes.
It's not light reading material. Well, the book that got me, and I wrote a review for it on my site, Part-Time Fanboy, the book that got me very interested in what you were doing, and I think you had sent me material before in the past, and I think a lot of it ended up in my, you know, for people out there who sometimes send me stuff ends up in like my promotional or spam folder, and I don't always see it, but something got through, and it's this book called Theatrics, which I really, really, really loved. I was like, I don't know what this is, but I'm going to read it and check it out. And I ended up just really loving it. Can you talk to me a little bit about Theatrics?
Sure. So, Theatrics, that's book one of two. The second book is currently being illustrated by Leonardo Gonzalez. It actually spun out of an idea from one of the stories I had in Twisted Dark about, because there's a relationship with... like it's behind the scenes person, like behind every great man there's a great woman, apparently. It was a quote I heard when I was a kid, and it was in show business that you can have the star, but the star's not his own without a good manager.
Sure.
And that was basically the genesis for this idea. Theatrics is about this guy called Rudy Burns. He's the most famous actor in Broadway in the 1920s, and he's living the fast life, spending money, living a good life. And one night he's drunk, and as he walks home, he's mugged, beaten up, and left for dead. And he loses everything to that one night. He loses his looks, he loses his job, he loses his money, his apartment, his girl. He loses everything.
Mm.
But it's what he decides to do next that makes it interesting. And I can tell you what it's about. What he does is because he's a big guy. He used to be an amateur boxer. He decides to take on this persona of a European count who's crazy, whose family were murdered in front of him, and his mind snapped. And so he eats raw chickens on stage, and he believes that the man he's fighting is the man who's killed his family, and he's absolutely nuts. But it's all an act, so he's getting in the opponent's heads, making them lose the fight before the fight actually starts. This wasn't his idea, this was his friend's idea, and I don't want to say any more than that, but if you've read book one, more twists and turns are coming in book two.
Well, it's interesting because the file that you sent me, I mean, I read the whole thing, and I thought that it was the ending. I was like, oh, this is the ending, and I thought it was kind of like a nice, sweet ending, and then I wrote the review, and then I heard from you eventually, and you were like, oh, there's more, and I was like, oh, really? Because that could have just been, I mean, I remember thinking like it was a little bit of an odd place to leave off, but at the same time, I was like, okay, that's satisfying. That works for me. So there is a part two coming, correct?
Yes, I'm mostly known for my endings that are quite shocking. The ending of Theatrix, I think, is the best ending I've done so far.
You mean of the whole series?
Of anything I've written so far, I think the ending you'll get for Theatrix is, it's brutal, is the word I'd use.
Oh, boy. Well, don't tell me that, because part of what I really loved about it was that was how optimistic it was. I mean, you know, because you have a character who is faced with the tragedy, and he sort of kind of makes the best of it, and you don't really see that a lot in sort of like these darker sort of tales. Like, that's what I... Are you telling me that now it's going to be this awful, awful finale, and I'm going to be like, no, what did you do?
Well, it's awful for one person, okay, but you don't know who it is.
Oh, no. And now you've got me... When does it come out? Because now I want to read it.
I got to speak to Leo about that. He's drawing it probably by the end of the year, I think.
Gotcha. So where do you find out? So do you write all of your books? Are you pretty much the writer on all of these, or?
Well, I was for most of the titles. I write very fast. So I do this thing at Comic-Con where I have a Twisted Dark Challenge. I'll write a short story in 5 minutes flat. I need a name, phrase, occupation, object, and location, and then they time me. It's just a weird thing I can do, but I have written most of the titles, but where we're moving towards now is helping other people, because I do like writing, but I love producing.
Sure. So, I mean, how do you go about finding your talent? I mean, originally, how did you, because you didn't draw Twisted Dark, did you? Did you draw the whole
thing? No. Drawing requires talent, so I don't do any of that.
Okay.
How I found artists, at the start was honestly a nightmare. I didn't know where to look and what page rates, how much to pay for the art. I had to fire quite a few at the start. But now it's much easier because they come to you, or you can look at their portfolio. I know what to look for. If you look at the first like Twisted Dark right now, look at Volume 1. The art is very raw in places. Some of the dialogue is a bit clunky to me. But the very first print run was much worse. The lettering was appalling, because I did lettering myself. Uh-huh. And I had to change out some of the art because I didn't know anything about art, really. Once you start making stuff, you start to understand it more. And once you start to teach, then you really start learning. Mm-hmm. So when you ask how I find talent, I actually have these online courses where I teach people how to make comics. Mm-hmm. Because I believe there are six fundamental elements you need to make comics. And each of those I break down to further sections. So first of all, you need the premise. And that's just your hook to get people to pick up the book in the first place.
Sure.
My favorite example of that is Red Sun by Mark Miller. It's what if Superman had landed 4 hours earlier?
Sure.
Because he would have landed in the Soviet Union instead of America, and growing up with those values, who would he have become? I thought that's a phenomenal premise. It's very short, concrete, concise, and then people can repeat it so they can tell others what the book's about, so they can do a lot of the marketing for you.
Yeah.
So once you have the premise, then you have your writing, you've got your illustration, you've got your coloring, you've got your lettering, and you've got your editing. And you need to have something, you know, good people in all those areas. You can do it all yourself, but it's unlikely. So it's best normally have specialists. And then each of those I break down to different sections. So, for example, writing, I have it's dialogue. So if I'm rambling too much, feel free to cut this.
No, keep going. Keep going. It's interesting. I mean, it's interesting to hear everyone's process. This is why I like interviewing creators. You know, people do things differently. And if you've got a 6-point process that you're going to lay down, I think I and anybody listening would love to hear about it. So go on.
Sure. So for each of those sections, I have a little model, which came about because I believe feedback is a gift, but not people aren't always good at receiving or giving it, especially creative types.
Sure.
So I have to be very specific about, okay, so I didn't like the script. Why didn't I like it? Well, I didn't like, for example, the dialogue or the character motivation didn't make sense, or there wasn't anything. You said this in the 1600s, but you haven't really used anything about the universe of that time period of it. For example, that's the sort of feedback I give.
Yeah.
So if you imagine you're in a hotel room flicking through the TV with the channels, if you ignore the visuals for a second, because this is just the story, the writing, if the dialogue is boring, you'll change channels because it's dull.
Sure.
Or if it's stupid, you'll change channels. The next level is the plot. Does it make sense? Do you understand it? Does it surprise you? If it's good, you'll keep watching. What keeps you coming back week after week, though, is the characters. You start to care about the characters, or you really hate them, and you want to know what happens to them.
Yeah.
And what gets you coming back really long term is the universe. And that's why people dress up as stormtroopers or the Night's Watch, in Game of Thrones, rather than actual known characters, because they just love the universe that's been created. Like people dress up as people from Avatar. And people have their own preferences. So some people just care mostly about characters. Oh, Wolverine's in this? I'm in. But some people go, oh, the universe is set in the Wild West? That's what I want to buy it. Some people care about the plot. Oh, this is about an action film with deceit in it. Or some people just care about dialogue, like Aaron Sorkin or Kevin Smith's writing.
Yeah.
But even if you have all those four elements, it's like having the best joke in the world. You need to know how to tell it. And like my dad can make everyone laugh with a joke. My mum tells the same joke and no one laughs.
Yeah.
So the storytelling aspect. So sometimes someone has a great idea for a story, but they just haven't written it well. And when they say it verbally to me, it comes out well. But on the page, I'm not getting what they're trying to say.
Mm.
And so anyway, I'll stop rambling on about this. That's just the writing side. Then have the same models for the art, for coloring, for the lettering.
No, I mean, it's not babbling. I mean, that's what this kind of podcast is for. But what sort of things do you look for in an artist on your books? Because it seems like a lot of these books have very different styles. So I would imagine it's kind of like what matches what the story or the tone of the story.
Yeah, so the model has four elements. The first is the quality or the style. And the style does for the tone you're trying to tell. If someone draws in a very, like, let's say, a Ben Templesmith style, that's not going to work for a children's comic.
Sure.
Or similarly, if you have like a very cartoony style, that's not going to work for a serious action story, typically.
Mm-hmm.
But I group quality and style in the same area because sometimes your quality is great, the style just isn't right. Or the style is right, but the quality isn't good enough.
Sure.
So that's when you look at art, that's the very first thing you look for. You can say objectively, this style is good. Sorry, this quality is good. I just don't like it.
Yeah.
So quality of style is the first thing you see. The next thing is clarity. And a lot of manga suffers from this, like Berserk. It's good drawing, but I can't actually see what's going on this page, or it's too busy.
Yeah.
And if you've ever read a book and you've got to the end of the page and went, oh, I haven't taken any of this in, you have to go back and reread it. That, to me, is the author failing you. And the reason it's failed is because there was something in there that you didn't understand, and your brain was trying to process that, and you kept on reading.
Yeah.
So with comics, because it's so visual, you should instantly understand what's going on the page, unless you're deliberately trying to make it hard for the reader. But that should be a deliberate choice. So the second thing is the art clear, clean? Can I understand what's happening? And then the next one, which is more important of all, is the choice of shot. And this is, does it look visually interesting? Do they vary it between different panels? A lot of new artists will try to make every shot like a dynamic shot that you could pin up on a wall. But you can't do that because that's like having a film that's all jokes and there's no emotional drama behind it, or all action without breaks. By having a variance in intensity, it makes the more intense bits seem more intense.
Sure.
So, and the choice of shot is critical in how you keep the reader visually interested, but also tell the story. And the fourth element to me is storytelling. And a lot of that is to do with background, use of backgrounds. So if you see someone walking, you see the same person in the background in a different position in the second panel, so that the reader's never lost as to where they are in this particular scene.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, all of that makes sense. I mean, it seems like pretty much the basics of what you would need to know about illustrating comics, but obviously not so simple because not everyone's able to do it.
Yes, but and all the good artists know this anyway. I'm not telling them anything. I'm just telling them this is the things that I look for to make sure it works and it tells the story well.
Sure.
It's because I can't draw. I need artists who are much more talented, and they will see things that I don't see in the quality of things. And that's great. That's why you have specialists. I can't color either.
Sure. No, I totally get it. So basically, how do you make decisions on like what TPUB is going to publish? Is it stuff that you're pretty much interested in or creating, or do people come to you with pitches at this point? Or because you've definitely got you've got a number of books: Twisted Dark, like I said, Tabitha, Twisted Light, Tortured Life. It looks like you've even got sort of like a superhero book called Turncoat. What is it? Does the right idea just like drop in your lap? Do people submit ideas? Do you say like, oh, I want to make this kind of book now? It seems like TPUB is kind of like branching out into all different genres at this point.
Well, we want to have a book for everyone. Currently we have 15 titles in production. Ideas aren't really a problem for me. It's we have the budget and the timeline of not putting out too much content at a certain time. But also, of the students I have who take my course, I pick the best ones and help them to make their comics. So we do accept pitches from people. What I say is, if you are an expert comic maker, we're not the right publishing house for you. And if you don't, because if you think you make it all yourself, I'd go for someone like Image, because then you can retain all your rights and not have much editorial anyone interfering in your work.
Sure.
We genuinely believe in pushing you to make your stuff as good as it can be. That's part of our value add. We will help. If you come to us with a finished comic, it's too late. We don't want it. We want you to come to us at your script stage. So maybe you've done some concept art and you've got your script, and then we will push you to make the script better. And we have a little, okay, I love building models. I guess it's my business background. But it's a little Venn diagram of creator's vision and editor's input. And there's always a point in the middle. If the creator wants to do something which I fundamentally disagree with, and that's going to make us not going to tell a good story, I won't accept it. We're not moving forward. Mm-hmm. Similarly, if there's something I want and the creator doesn't want it, we shouldn't move forward either. But there's always a way to work together to explain what the problem is. Okay, now how are we going to solve it? I'll give you an idea for a solution, but I'd rather the creator come up with a solution here.
Well, so this is very interesting because, like you said, this is a little bit different than how a lot of other indie companies do it. Usually they want you to come with a sort of finished project or close to finished project, or at least have a completed sort of idea of where you want the story to go. Maybe it's like a mini series, you know, and see how it goes. You're saying that if somebody has an idea and they want to come to TPUB, that they should start out from sort of their basic concept, their script, and that you would help them develop it as it goes along. Like, do you help people find artists and letterers and stuff like that?
We'll help them find colorists and letterers, not artists typically, because we want them to do that. We'd like to see some concept art as well at the start. But what we ask for in terms of the story is the whole story in just 5 bullet points. Beginning, what happens in the middle one, middle two, middle three, and the end. That's it, because that's enough for us to know, is this an interesting story?
Uh-huh. But it seems like if you're sort of sculpting the script and the art from the beginning of the process, or close to the beginning of the process, I mean, how do creative rights work out, like, for TPUB? Like, if I'm a writer and an artist that's come to you, how does that whole deal sort of, like, play itself out? Because I know that with others, it seems like, oh, you get a certain percentage of sort of like, you know, whatever, media rights and, you know, merchandising rights and stuff like that. But if you're in a sort of on the bottom floor, it seems like you would be sort of more invested in having a chunk of that. Am I correct in assuming that, or am I wrong?
Yeah, we're more invested, but we still make sure that they, you know, get percentages for the rest of their lives because they're creating this.
Sure.
But if you look at our alumni, people who work with us, you can speak to like Michael Gordon or Jed or Terry Mayer. They're all very positive about the experience working with us, and that all we care about is making the best product possible. That's what we're after. So, like Michael said, that even if he works for other people in the future, he still wants to come back to us for us to edit our stuff, his stuff, so that we can still push him to do a better job. So, we do look after creators. They have to speak to us on a case-to-case basis as to how much work we do. But I believe we're offering a fair deal. And if it's not a good deal, then don't take it. Because, we're here. Everyone's comics is a passion industry, and you should be doing something that you love and working with people you like working with, I think.
Sure. Absolutely. Oh, wow. That's great. I mean, and so it seems like you've come a long way in the past several years. Where do you see sort of the future of TPUB going? I mean, how many more books do you, are you looking at becoming sort of like the next Image, the next Dark Horse, like that sort of thing, or?
We'd definitely like to be in the future, but we'll never put out as many books as Image do, I don't think, because our focus is on quality, not quantity. Not to say that Image puts out bad stuff. It is some great material. Just look at Saga. It's fantastic. But we do want it to be a place where anyone can find something they like. I don't think anyone like everything we do. Some people do, but not everyone. Mm-hmm. But our job is to make, our mission is to get more people reading and creating comics. So we work with schools and universities and teach businesses as well how you can use comics to improve your businesses, because it's about communication. And we're trialing with two different schools for exam results, putting our money where our mouth is, and testing, okay, these are your historical exam results. After you use comics for education, see what your exam results are in the future.
Sure. And where do you teach? You said you teach a course about creating comics. Is it online, or is it somewhere in the UK?
It's online. Well, I guest lecture at universities, but really it's an online course. I run a monthly webinar, which gives you free introductory to how to make comics if you've got no experience. And then if you want a full course, then there's an upsell for that. And then you can complete at your own time. You send homework to me. And I use that, honestly, I also use that to find future talent, because I can see people go, this person knows what they're doing.
Sure. Sure. And is it on the TPUB website, or is it someplace else?
It's on the TPUB website, but webinars are run through Facebook, TPUB, at TPUB Comics. But yeah, on our website, which is tpubcomics.com.
Gotcha. So can you tell us a little bit more about the other books here, like Tabitha, Twisted Light, Tortured Life? I mean, just sort of like some quick, you said like five bullet points. What sort of other things are you offering besides Twisted Dark, which is sort of like that sort of, I think I had said like a horror sort of kind of an anthology, but not really. They sort of like come together in one. But what is Tabitha about?
There's two different ways of describing it. I describe it as about a mailman in Los Angeles who uses his postal route to see who's not collecting their post, the mail, and then he knows not at home, so he robs them.
Oh, really?
And that goes fine until he robs the wrong house, and then things escalate rapidly. That's how I describe it. The artist says things differently. He says this is about sex dolls and psychopaths.
Okay.
It's basically a comedy horror.
Gotcha.
Whereas Tortured Life is all-out horror. That's about a guy called Richard who gradually gets the ability to see how anyone's going to die. Anyone he looks at, he knows what's going to happen to them. But he hates it. He just sees death everywhere. He sees like cancer, car crash, old age, aneurysm. So he becomes a hermit and doesn't want to see anybody. And eventually he's so miserable he goes to kill himself. But as he's about to jump off a bridge, he sees a girl and he can't see how she dies. Everyone else he can, but not her. And as he's looking at her, she turns and looks at him, walks over and says, "Hello, Richard. I think we need to talk." And then the story starts.
Nice. And how about Turncoat, this sort of superhero thing? I see underneath it says you might also like, next wave, Deadpool powers, like that sort of thing.
It's hilarious. Turncoat is about an assassin whose job is to kill superheroes. The only problem is he's rubbish.
He's no good at it.
And no good at all. And to make matters worse, his ex-wife is brilliant. She keeps eating his hits.
Oh, really? So I gotcha. So she's also a hit person as well, an assassin.
Yeah, that's what he became a hitman to try and impress her. He's really good at it.
Oh, wow. And it looks like you have a kid's book as well called The World of Chub Chub.
Oh, yeah. That was. It's unfortunate because it sells. It was never meant to be for public release. It was a gift I made to my mother. it's all true stories of me as a kid, and now the whole. Now everyone knows what a horrible child I was.
So wait, but it's up to you to put it on your website and offer it for sale. You just said like, oh, unfortunately it sells or it's a big seller, but you're the one who put it on the site.
No, I didn't. My mother made me put it on the site.
Your mother made, why? Because she wanted to know how horrible it was raising you or something?
Well, she really loved the book and she liked it so much. She says, Neil, you have to sell this.
Oh,
and
that's great.
Well, I said, nope. She said, yes.
She said, yes. Is it one volume or is it like a continuing thing that did you?
I'm stopping. I'm not doing anymore.
Oh, really?
Well,
I'm going to have to read it. I'm going to have to check this out because I need to know what Neil was up to when he was a little kid torturing his mother.
You know, there is one story in that I'm actually still proud of because I grew up in Saudi Arabia. My parents were working out there. And
oh, wow.
There are a lot of mosquitoes, and flies are too fast. You can't catch them, as you can catch. Mm. And what's cool is sometimes, especially if they just suck the blood out of you, they fly a bit slower. So I caught one in my hand. I said to my sister, hey, sis, high five. So she gave me a hand up, and I smacked it around with the mosquito.
No. Wow.
Of course, she saw the blood, and she ran off and screamed, Mom, so I got in trouble. But as she screamed that, I caught another one. And my mother arrived, made me apologize to my sister. She said, I'm sorry. Shake hands.
Oh, no. That's funny. I'm going to have to check that book out. So it seems to me what's refreshing about you and what's refreshing about T-Pub is that you seem to be very heavily invested in comic books, like your love for the medium, what it can do, what the possibilities are and all that stuff. What do you have any sort of like future goals for the company to like reach out into other media? Like, are you looking for like movie deals, TV deals, like that sort of thing? I mean, I know things work a little differently in the UK, like with the BBC or whatever. But obviously you're also present in the US. What do you have any ambitions for that sort of thing? Or are you just sort of mostly focusing on your comic book work?
Oh no, I would definitely love to move into other areas. We've had some false starts already, like Valhalla, who make Walking Dead. They read Tortured Life and they asked us to pitch as a TV series. So we actually got an Emmy Award winning writer on board and we wrote two seasons worth of material. And I thought it was really good and they liked it, but they took it to their studio, which I can't name, which has a first look deal. And they took one look at the cover and said, oh, no, we commissioned a series about a necromancer who looks like that last month, so no.
Oh, wow.
I, that was 3 months' worth of work gone on the basis of a cover.
Oh, no. Like,
we've had talks with other people, I don't know if I should say or not, which people have liked. So the talks are mostly about Twisted Dark, which is our biggest seller. I have actually a meeting later this week with someone else, but in terms of TV for that, because it would not be in a film, I actually want to do something that's never been done before. So we built this app for it because I said the story is not chronological. So with the app, people can read the stories in print order, or they click a button and then it changes it to chronological order, or they click a button and it ranks by character. So this character, these are all the stories featuring just that character. Or you can have it time-based. I've got 5 minutes before my train arrives. I can read a 5-minute story or a 10-minute story or a 15-minute story. So it ranks it. Or even just the highest rated stories, click and rearranges all of it. Mm-hmm. And the idea would be that the nowadays traditional broadcasting of 30 minutes for comedy, 15 an hour for drama is over. If you look at The Queen on Netflix, they had some episodes that were 38 minutes and one that was 90 minutes, I think.
Yeah.
You can take as much time as you need to tell the story. And so this app would actually push to a other platform like Netflix or Hulu or whatever, and people could read the comic and then watch the TV episode of that, or just push to watch the episode, and it would track what you've seen in terms of the comic and the TV episode and gamify it.
Oh, wow. That's a really good idea. So that's sort of like blending the two mediums together.
Yeah, so you can see the whole background of the story, because people did like it for TV, but they thought it wasn't linear enough. And I can explain that we would adapt it for TV to make it more linear. But even if we did that, the hardcore fans could still get more of the background information on the character by reading the comic book if they wanted, like they did for Heroes, for example.
Yeah. Oh, that's kind of an asinine comment, not linear enough. I mean, there's tons of stuff that's not linear on TV. or on Netflix or whatever?
When I first pitched it, they said, oh, it's an anthology format. Anthologies don't work. And then Black Mirror came. Yep, this is people are so convinced that this is the world is how it is until someone proves that it can be done differently.
Well, it's funny. I mean, they're even working on a Twilight Zone relaunch again, like another Twilight. I mean, that's like one of the biggest shows ever in the history of television, and an anthology doesn't work. That's kind of, I mean, I will admit that my own, for some reason, like anthology comics for me, I never really got into them because in my own personal taste, it's like growing up, I used to like comics for the art. And it's like I was buying a book for the art, and an anthology book, you would get different artists. And I was like, no, I just want this one artist or this one writer. But I think as I get older, I'm sort of being exposed to more anthology stuff, and I'm finding a value in it that I didn't see before.
See, this is an interesting point you make, because some people buy comics for different reasons. Some people just for the story, which is the writing. Some people buy it for the art. Some people buy it just for the coloring. And I've actually seen people buy comics just for the lettering.
No, really?
Yep, I've seen it. Yeah, some graphic designers, they go the lettering on, and they really love it.
Wow.
But that's why your chance of getting a hit is going back to the model I had before, is people like different things. So you have to do the best you can in all the main areas to increase the likelihood of getting a hit.
Yeah.
But going back to the anthology thing, if you look at, because Swiss Doc isn't really, the stories all connect. People like seeing I like seeing the same characters again and again, especially if they're unexpected when they pop up. But Sandman, which is a phenomenal series by Neil Gaiman, he used a rotating bunch of artists all the time. And some people didn't like that. Some people did like it because people like different things.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, that makes sense. What's really funny to me is that what I really do love are like those old EC comics. And those are all anthologies. I mean, they would sort of use the same artists like within different books, but they would be different stories and you would get different takes on things. But yeah, it's really funny because for me, anthology books, I'm just like, sometimes I'll get something in my email and it's an anthology book and I'll just be like, oh no. But it's a prejudice that I have, and it's really bad because I actually went to a panel over the weekend while I was at WonderCon, and actually one of the things that they mentioned for, you know, artists trying to get into the biz was that they should sign on to anthologies or see who's doing an anthology, and it's a good way to break in. I mean, that was sort of the advice that was given, so that you could do like little chunks of story and, you know, get in with other artists who might, you know, have a fan base already or that sort of thing. So it's kind of interesting.
Definitely. So Carlos, what's your favorite comic you're reading right now?
I'm actually, it's really funny. I picked up, there is a comic shop in my area that is really kind of like this giant clearinghouse for old comics. And they sell stuff for really cheap. And over the holidays, they were having a huge sale. So I got something like 70 issues of Will Eisner's The Spirit, like reprints from like the early 80s. And I got 70 issues in one chunk for like $15. And I've just been reading a lot of those lately. I actually just picked up an Uncanny X-Men omnibus, the Paul Smith years, you know, the Chris Claremont Paul Smith years, which was a series that I loved as a kid. But right now I've been trying to go through the Will Eisner stuff, because obviously I've read some of The Spirit, and they came out with those hardcovers like years ago, DC Comics, but they were so expensive that I'd only pick up like one here or there. But this was just like an opportunity to pick up, you know, a chunk of The Spirit, which I've not admittedly read enough of. And I'm really enjoying it. I'm really enjoying his artwork and stuff like that. It's just kind of blowing away. And I have like a small little web comic that I do every once in a while. It's called The Periwinkle Push. And I just wanted to look at that because I only get to draw little bits at a time, like during the day or during the week. So I wanted to see what were some good ways of like achieving some really good storytelling and stuff like that. And it's really been an educational experience because, like, obviously Will Eisner's the master, and I find the artwork and the storytelling really great, but I find some of the stories to be a little hokey and sort of, I mean, it's from a different era. You know, but I definitely find some of the stories themselves to be like, you know, a little, for lack of a better term, like childish in a way. Does that make sense?
100%. I agree. And I know what you mean. Because Will Eisner was great. His Contract with God is probably the first graphic novel. Some of his stuff is fantastic. But yeah. I did read some of his spirit, and I did feel some of it was childish.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know if childish is the right word. Maybe a little hokey or, you know, the stories. But what I find really interesting about the spirit is that so many of the stories don't really focus on the spirit. Like, I was like, wow. Like, it's just focusing on, like, the bad guys or the commissioner or Ellen or, like, other people in the story. But the spirit sometimes is, like, rarely in it. Or some random guy on the street that Will Eisner decided to tell a really sad story about, you know. And the spirit kind of, like, shows up because it's his book. But as you sort of get to those, like, post-war years, it's really fascinating to me. How sometimes the book isn't even about the spirit, or the spirit isn't even sort of like the character that has the most agency in the story. You know, he's just kind of there. And then the other thing that I really loved about the spirit was how much he gets the crap kicked out of him. Like, he's just constantly getting the crap kicked out of him. And I was just like, I love this. How often do you see, like, a guy getting tied up as much or beat up or thrown into a river or whatever? And it's like, you know, usually the superhero or the protagonist of a superhero type book is like, you know, the guy that comes in and blah, blah, blah. But this guy just gets the crap kicked out of him. And he's always getting outsmarted too at times, you know? So those are the things that I kind of like found really, I actually ended up loving the spirit so much that I tracked down a statue of the spirit and ended up buying it on eBay because I was like, I just, there was something about the character that I just really, that I just found like really endearing, how sort of he would get caught flat-footed all the time. You know what I mean?
I actually hadn't realized how much he gets caught until you mentioned it. And actually, yeah, it is quite funny. It's different.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, some of the real iconic images of the spirit tend to be of him getting in trouble or like being, you know, seduced by a woman or him tied up or beat up. And I just find that really interesting, you know, where you see the iconic images of Batman or Superman, you know, or like arms akimbo or like holding a guy ready to beat him up or, you know, these really like, you know, male testosterone, like sort of like images. And, you know, the spirit is the complete opposite. He's just kind of like, he seems like the working man's hero, which I think that's what Eisner was going for. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, you're right, actually.
Anyway, that's very much what I'm very absorbed into now, just because I'm trying to sort of make my art better than it is. But in any case, what are some of the stuff that you're recommending right now, other than T-Pub? Obviously, we want everyone to read T-Pub and check out T-Pub. But is there something that you're currently reading from another publisher that you would recommend?
Not for the artwork, but I'm rereading a very small indie comic called The Omen, which is my top 10 series.
You read it? Yeah, I've interviewed him several times. He's been on the podcast like so many times. I love The Omen. Yeah.
Yeah, I love it too. So he posted on Instagram that he's redrawing he's drawing The Omen again, because he's actually going to tie up three of his series together in for one more comic. That's The Omen, Spandex, and Zeros. Yeah. So for those of you who aren't familiar with this stuff, this guy called Martin Eden, I really admire his writing. I don't admire his artwork. However, he prefers drawing to writing, but I think his writing is phenomenal, frankly.
Yeah.
And Yeoman is a very complex, long story, which it throws you for loops and as twists and turns that I really like and appreciate.
Yeah, yeah.
So I'm rereading that, and I'm also rereading some of Alan Moore's Swamp Thing, because it's just brilliant.
Oh yeah, I've actually never read all of that. I have to track that down at some point. It's really funny because like with Martin Eden, he's like the most recurring like person I've had on my podcast, just because I love talking to him so much. And I actually really love The Omen and Spandex. I was given Spandex when I used to write reviews for Ain't It Cool News. And I checked it out and I was like, it's funny that you mentioned the art. I remember looking at the art and thinking like, oh, this is kind of simplistic in a way, but once you start reading the book, there's something about it that I just fell in love with and endeared me to it. Like, and he's really good with colors, particularly in spandex. Like, I thought that it was really great. But yeah, the Omen, Martin, he's like one of my favorite. I love reading his stuff. I'm always, you know, I think it's fantastic. So that's definitely a thumbs up for me. So cool. So, you know, to wrap this up, I know it's taken us a couple of months to do this interview. First of all, I just wanted to say thank you for being patient. I mean, you know, the time difference between here and the UK has kind of made it problematic for us. But are there any future conventions you're going to, or any future plans, any new books coming out from TeePub that people should be looking out for?
Well, the most anticipated one we have is Twisted Sci-Fi. It's called The Theory. That's coming out later this year. Yeah. Of all the things I've done, the fans are most excited about that because most of my fans like Twisted Dark. And by the way, I'll give your listeners a link. They can read it all for free, Twisted Dark, by the way.
Oh.
Yeah. Because we have a challenge we do at every convention, which is read the first two stories and then try and not buy the book.
Oh.
And about 80% of people fail and buy the book on the spot. I hope your listeners will take the challenge, and it's free. So all the challenge is to read the first two stories and then try and stop.
Oh, wow. That's great.
So the spin-off from that is Twisted Sci-Fi, which is a same type of concept of short stories that all, but they connect much more clearly from the start, and they're all dark with twist endings. Oh. In the sci-fi setting.
Well, no, I mean, this has been a really great interview. I really appreciate you taking the time, and I know we've been bouncing back and forth. I really, really, really love theatrics, and I really, really enjoyed what I've read of Twisted Dark. So, I mean, I just wish you the best of luck, and I really appreciate you coming on to the podcast.
Well, thanks for having me, Christian. That's great. Are you going to be at C2E2 next week?
Not Chicago, no. I live in Los Angeles. So, I was at WonderCon this past weekend, and I kind of stopped going to San Diego, but I'm not going to be at C2E2. So you're going to be at C2E2?
Yes, I will be.
In Chicago. Cool. Well, yeah, no, anybody who's there, definitely check out. You're going to have a booth, correct?
That's right, yes. I should know what the booth number is, but I don't right now.
Oh, okay. Well, that's great. So everyone go check Neil and T-Pub out at C2E2 in Chicago. So you tend to come to the conventions in the U.S.?
Yeah, I'll be good to... we might be in San Diego this year. I don't know yet. We're on the wait list, but we're on a... We always do Emerald City in Seattle. We do... Chicago, we do New York, and we do Toronto, because those are the biggest ones in North America, so we always try and make them.
Oh, great. Okay, and what is the name, what should people search at Kickstarter to donate to your Kickstarter campaign?
Oh, yeah, so that's The Transdimensional. It's written by Michael Gordon. I think it's, if you like sci-fi with a bit of action, I'd highly recommend it, a bit of horror. It's called Transdimensional. I actually won't tell you anything about it, because you can read the first two issues for free on the Kickstarter.
Gotcha. Oh, okay, great. So everyone search Transdimensional on Kickstarter. Check out TeePub on teepub.co.uk. And thank you very much, Neil. I really appreciate you doing the podcast. I know, as I've said at least twice already, it's been a bit of a bear to get this going. But, you know, we got you on. So I'm very happy to have chatted with you.
Likewise, Christian. Great to finally speak.
Great. And my name is Christian Horn, and this has been the Part-Time Fanboy Podcast. You can follow us on Facebook, on Twitter, on Instagram, or email us at ptf@parttimefanboy.com. Thanks for listening, and we will have another episode up soon. Bye.
Part-Time Fanboy.